This is the Topics and Takes podcast with WRALSportsFan.com's Lauren Brownlow and Marilyn Payne. You can download this weekly podcast at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app on iTunes or the Google Play stores, or Saturday mornings at 9 on 99.9 The Fan. Now, here's Topics and Takes with Lauren and Marilyn.
This is Topics and Takes. I am Lauren Brownlow from 99.9 The Fan and WRALSportsFan.com.
And I'm Marilyn Payne from WRALSportsFan.com.
Oh, we have so much to get into. We have a big weekend in the Triangle, huge weekend.
The biggest day.
Oh, and we can talk about the fact that that's happening the way it is and how that makes
not
me
happy.
Feel inside. But
not
whatever.
Happy. I'll just, spoiler alert, I'm not thrilled.
Yeah, but I'm not either.
So goes life, right?
But we always have a great tweet or two to get to let you know who's kind of killing it in the social media game. And the NBA never disappoints in this regard, really. Like, really, we could have an NBA feature type thing every week on just the off-court craziness and drama that goes on in that league, like, regularly.
I mean, look, I'm okay with it because
people snuck in a locker room a week ago.
Yeah, somehow it feels as though we should have mentioned that by now and we hadn't. That was outstanding, first of all, as an event. I don't really watch the NBA, so these are the things that I personally care about. These are the things the NBA does that makes me care it exists.
Yes. No, I mean, I love it. Like, it's nonstop drama. But anyway, this is relatively tame by NBA standards, but still pretty clever and was making the rounds on Thursday. There was an All-Star draft. By the way, I do like this idea very much.
Love
for the
this.
NBA All-Star game, that there's a draft, there
and
were two captains.
Everyone has said, and this is incredibly true, that the league and arguably all television networks missed out on an opportunity, probably TNT taking the biggest L here, to live broadcast this draft.
Right? God, NFL Network would have had, not only that would have been broadcast, would have had like a, well, they do broadcast their Pro Bowl draft. So, I mean.
Which is exactly the point.
Well, anyway, Kevin Durant was taken number one in this draft by LeBron James, I might add, by Team LeBron. And he said, quote, "Well, finally someone picked me number one. That feels pretty good." Obviously, Kevin Durant went number two overall in, I believe, the 2007 NBA draft, although I'm going to make sure about that. But yeah, it was the year that both he and, yes, that's the one, he and Greg Oden were coming out of school. Greg Oden, the very talented seven-footer that went to Ohio State, had some foot trouble. He went number one. As it would turn out, Greg Oden had a lot of foot trouble that continued into the NBA. And Kevin Durant is, well, we all know who Kevin Durant is and what he has done. But I think that always sort of chapped him that he didn't go number one overall. And anyway, the Trailblazers saw this quote tweeted it, the Trailblazers that took Rego to number one, and said, simply, "are bad." I like that. I mean, there's really...
And that's all there was to say.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just that simple, you know?
I mean, and in this case, I do think it really is.
Yeah. Although Blake Griffin, to be fair, tweeting the Joker walking away from the crime scene after the break-in.
Not to be.
Was pretty good,
Not
too.
To be outdone.
When you talk about simple tweets that tell the tale, that was definitely one. The NBA is like the nonstop drama league, and I really love it.
And I kind of wonder, because my argument for a long time on the NBA is, and sorry to anyone I may offend late January with this, mid-ACC season with this, basketball is not my favorite sport.
Right.
Football's my favorite sport. Baseball's my second favorite sport. And basketball's third.
Yeah, and I
think watching a pro league for me is just asking more from me than you're going to get.
Yeah, especially
the NBA.
Yeah.
I have always said I don't like the game on the court because it's just so offense, 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 offense. They make all the shots. They're so good at the game that it's,
right,
you know, it lacks the level of competition that I love about college basketball. I feel like,
well, and just
in a different way.
The stakes are different. There's different stuff behind it, obviously.
Yeah,
you know?
And so for me, that's been my pass on the NBA, but they make me care about it, which is wild to me because, Lauren,
I don't watch much either.
Reality shows, though. And
oh.
It's like the interest
it's
factor.
A real reality show.
Right, the interest factor to the NBA is the drama, and it is the qualities, I think, the humor and the spats and the realness that you would find are qualities that people who love reality television also like about the league. And it's what I love about the league, but I don't usually love that type of drama like that. And so Now I'm like mad at myself for liking this stuff from the NBA, but it's too good not to pay attention to.
It's going to make the playoffs really, really good. Just so you know. Like, it's going to make the playoffs amazing.
When we're in the dead of the summer and I'm wondering what to talk about and it's saving us.
Right? I'm just saying. It's definitely out there as a thing. So that was a pretty good tweet from the Portland Trailblazers. And we also had...
Speaking of sports we don't care about. Is my transition on that one. Go ahead.
I already forgot what the second...
It's the XFL, Lauren.
All right, got it.
And Sorry, Lauren we'll couldn't even out. Remember how much we don't care about it. Right, nah, leave it in. We're not editing that out. That's exactly the point.
Maybe that's kind of the point,
that's
right?
That's exactly the point. It's perfect. The delivery there was an accident, but it was dead on.
Well, I don't remember. I don't know how old you were when the XFL was a thing.
Can I get a calendar year on that? Because I don't remember either. Which might
I
be the
say early 2000s.
Oh, okay. Then I was like 10.
So I was a little older. I still didn't watch it the last time the XFL was a thing. But the Panthers had a guy on their team that was perhaps the most famous XFL. Do you see him? You see him right there. He hate me on the back of the jersey.
Yes.
He hate me. Ended up being a key cog in the Panthers' first Super Bowl run as a kickoff returner. His name's Rod Smart. But He Hate Me was legendary. And so that's my... Whenever I think of the XFL, I think of Rod Smart, and I think of that name, which is fantastic.
Well, you're not wrong. Like, you're not alone. I saw that a lot, I guess, what was it, Thursday, Wednesday, on Twitter. Whatever day it was, everybody was tweeting, He Hate Me, and I didn't even bother to look it up. So 2001 was the first episode of the XFL. I was, in fact, depending on the month, 9 or 10 years old. So, no, I wasn't watching it. Probably won't be watching it this time around either.
I mean, I know that for me, like, the only thing I really saw about it yesterday as it was sort of getting rolled out was probably things I didn't care about at all when it came to whether I was going to watch it or not, which is that all the players will stand for the national anthem. Don't care. And also that none of them will have arrest records. Okay.
Oh, I missed. I mean, so I saw that.
I mean, if you want to say domestic violence, I will hear this conversation.
You hone in a little bit.
Right. But if you're going to just say any arrest, I'm like, whatever.
So who you're going to have?
A minor. Right.
Sorry. I'm really sorry. That's unfair to so many athletes.
People were
I apologize sincerely for that.
You know
who
people were immediately upset about, though, when that news came out? Johnny Manziel. They were like, no, Johnny Manziel? Nope,
done. Okay, so now I understand, just also for the record, I was hearing snippets about this announcement as it was going on, and there was like, you know, you could have made a checklist for like somebody should have made a drinking game or a bingo card ahead of this announcement. And so you've got the promise that it won't be political, which in turn insinuates...
Yeah, like
politics.
Well, yeah, I mean,
period.
Sorry, it just does, and it's whatever. Like, do you? You're trying to market to a certain group.
Okay. National anthem. Okay, it's already a lie to the first one, but that would be a square. Johnny Manziel is a square on any football league that is not the NFL, and perhaps in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Medlin, our sports content director at WROSportsFan.com, said Tim Tebow got a shout out, so that's a square.
Well, he definitely doesn't have an arrest record.
Which might have been the shout out, which does, yeah, I mean, that does make sense.
I mean, look, are there...
And apparently they're supposed to be like no gimmicks, like
are there...
no
yeah,
focus
what's
on
the
flashy cheerleaders this time around.
Yeah, no,
and I'm
cheerleaders.
Like, so, well, I'm out, first of all. If you can't promise me that I'm going to have someone who didn't make the Ladybirds on the team,
right.
I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, this isn't just about college football players that we miss watching, you know? This is about giving everybody a second chance.
I'm gonna give the XFL
an X.
I'm gonna give it an X and an F, and it's gonna take a L. Like, all right. Well, we just figured that out.
The gimmicks were really the reason. Yeah, I think we did. It gets an F.
It gets an X. What is the show? The it's like one of the singing shows.
America's Got Talent. Yeah,
I don't know.
The judges, judges will buzz you.
And there's a big X, a big red X that's got that, and it gets the okay. We just figured out what those letters stand for.
It gets a great F, and it took an L. Yesterday. It really did. I mean, look, you can't have that kind of league without any gimmicks. That's really stupid.
All right. You know who else took an L recently?
Oh, Maryland. That was good.
North Carolina Tar Heels.
Oh, boy, did they.
At Virginia Tech. The first loss there in, since 2010. 7-0 heading into that one Monday night. Not so much anymore. Cause for a court storming, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Buzz Williams.
Yeah, the Hokies had to have it.
His best Buzz.
Oh,
Best Buzz life, giving Frank Beamer all the Frank Beamer love.
Yep.
Frank was honored at the first time out of the game.
It was full Buzz.
It was superb.
He was full Buzz. And look, does Buzz kind of turn that stuff up a little bit when it's a marquee opponent? Sure, but that's
as
part of
you
his
should.
Right. That's part of his appeal. does Buzz, you know, get a little overzealous sometimes, like coming out to midcourt at bad times, maybe? Although that one wasn't all his fault.
But why
still,
we like him.
Buzz sometimes looks like he's about to come out to midcourt even when it's not supposed to be a dead ball. So
true. True.
Buzz is doing Buzz things, and that was pretty good. But yeah, I mean, look, Carolina looked the way they looked to me, and I know effort is brought up a lot with North Carolina when they lose games, right?
It's the buzzword. Not on purpose.
So it's almost a little bit like crying wolf sometimes. Like, I know that there are some people out there that go, really, it's effort every single time? Like, it's not just your opponent outplayed you or whatever. I think...
Yes and no.
Right. I think in this particular case, it's definitely both. But also, you could say that North Carolina's effort issues were much more glaring in this game than maybe in some others, where you could say, look, you just got outplayed. Like, just tip your hat. This one... you know, Jay Billis is calling them out on national TV for, like, lazy closeouts and bad, you know, rebounding technique and everything else. And
I missed all of that.
Oh, yeah. Like, he was, like, slow-moing, you know, Theo Pinson, okay, you're a senior. You're not going to put a hand up on that shot? And I'm like, dang.
Good.
It's like going through tape with Roy Williams
good,
right now.
Jay. It needs to happen. I mean, honestly, this team, it's not like they're the reigning national champions and lost their whole roster.
No.
It's they have guys who not only are four-year players or three-year players, but, you know, almost an extra year of mm-hmm. season just mm-hmm. in the postseasons in the last 2 years alone.
Right.
Likewise, added an extra at least year to my life for those extended basketball seasons. So I can promise you guys it's true.
I'm sure.
Five free throws was my biggest issue. And at first I thought Roy Williams was just like being chirpy and complaining about one of his like Roy Williams-isms.
Mm-hmm.
They took five free throws.
It's an absurdly
the whole game.
Low number for them. And it's really unacceptable.
And Virginia Tech had like 12.
Yeah.
No, is that right?
Yeah,
that's right.
That is right. It was a game where not a lot of fouls were called, but it was also a game where not a ton of defense was played.
They just
so.
Didn't, yeah, but they didn't even do anything to
right.
like try
exactly.
and... That to me is one of those, when you talk about effort, you know, there's like a short list of mm-hmm. of things that are the first words, the first details of a game that kind of align with that claim that they're not trying. Rebounding is the most glaring. Defense is one, certainly, which is exactly what you just touched on. Virginia Tech, you know, only 12 trips to the free throw line for them. So, like, you know, they're not exactly being forced into contested shots either.
No.
But, you know, they couldn't do anything except for just kind of jack up shots. Or rather, they chose not to. It's not that they couldn't,
mm-hmm.
because it's not exactly like Virginia Tech forced them.
Yeah, I mean, and Virginia Tech's defense has had its own issues, and
yeah.
it wasn't like it was something I would call lockdown. I think what happened to Carolina was in the first half, they missed some decent looks, in my opinion. They started to get frustrated. In the second half, they started off pretty well, getting the ball inside like Roy Williams wanted them to
Once on the very first possession
right.
to Luke May.
They did a little more of that. They got a little bit better shots. And then as Virginia Tech kept making everything, I think what happened to them was, and I almost compared it to like a teenager that's being forced to mow the lawn. Like, they were so over it. They just, like, they were like, you know what? We don't want to do this anymore. It just seemed like they were just like, no. Things got difficult for them, and they were like, we don't feel like trying anymore. Like, that was the general vibe I got from them.
So, indeed, lack of effort.
Yeah, I mean, now, was it too late at that point, arguably, to do anything about it? You could certainly make that case, you know? But that was the vibe I got. And that's the part that I think is alarming to me. It's not necessarily that Roy Williams cites a general overall lack of effort. It's just that, especially when they're on the road and when things get difficult for them, it feels like they don't have some of that same fight that you see, that you're used to seeing from Carolina teams in the past when teams make a run on them. And it's like,
Well, for me, it's not just been on the road for North Carolina
this
season.
No, you're right. It's not.
It's been the whole season.
Yeah.
The exception to that, literally the only game in my mind, and if you can think of another, Lauren, please come with it.
Yeah.
The Clemson game is the game where North Carolina managed to have the signature fight that it's had. And I honest to God believe it's because of that streak.
Yeah, I was going to cite, it might be, you might be right.
I mean, like, they cared, and that's why.
I was going to cite Florida State a little bit, because that was a game where I thought they played terribly in the first half
in
terms
didn't
of
look
their
good.
Defense. And then in the second half, I could see that they sort of locked in a little more. They tried harder. Okay. And I thought they fought in that game. They didn't lose because they didn't try. They lost because they got outplayed, you know, just a little bit. But they certainly fought back in the second half and had every chance to win that game. So that's another game I would have cited.
All right. So we got 2 out of 21.
Right.
That's not a good number.
Right.
Not
right.
doing the math, but it's something less than 10%.
They've certainly had some ugly stretches in almost every, it's certainly in every ACC game they've played. They've had some ugly stretches.
And look, I mean, it's, I do understand that a part of that, and I think, you know, we have discussed, you and I personally, we the general public, the folks who follow college basketball, the situation that North Carolina is in. Turner Walston wrote about it, our tripartisan North Carolina contributor on WRIOSportsFan.com. The impact that Tony Bradley's exit has left on the team, it now lacks an experienced second big.
And a dynamic
true big.
Yes.
Luke May is there and he is doing some really good work. But outside of that, they don't have a center. They don't have a true center. And I think for me, I do wonder slightly for a guard like Joel Berry, for a Theo Pinson, how that absence affects what they're able to do and their instincts that they've developed, in particular Joel,
certainly
over the course
of
three seasons.
And everything else, and just the way the offense works. I mean, there's no question.
You got to stop and think about it a little bit, because in seasons past, all of them, every game, every team that these guys have played on, you get in a tough spot, you go inside. Things aren't working like they need to. You've got a big who's going to pull down rebounds. Kennedy Meeks last year, Bryce Johnson the year before, and the senior seasons that those two guys had were just, you know, monster years. The reliability factor for those two, you know, I don't think can be understated.
No question.
Or rather overstated. And so, you know, they are old enough that they should know how to kind of solve the problem when they get in the situation now. But at the same time, they've had to figure out, you know, they're first season without that, here's how we do it when we get in this position scenario. Because the play is not the same. The personnel is not the same. The consistency is not the same.
Yeah, I think that's a good point as well. And I think, you know, in the past, if Joel Berry, you know, was penetrating, getting into the lane, you know, defenses, like you said, the spacing is different. Defenses had to worry about, you know, quick little dump off to a big guy or a big guy getting an offensive rebound. Now they're more worried about kickouts, which is, you know, that's certainly not the way North Carolina's even used to playing. So as much as we were talking about Bizarro UNC, it's still an adjustment, I think, for them to sort of figure out who and what they are. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah.
But their schedule is certainly very difficult. Like, it's not getting any easier, and it's not going to. So if they're going to start fighting, they better start now, or else things are going to get pretty ugly, aside from Pitt, which, And maybe even, I think, State fans would argue NC State, which is coming up this week.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that's next. If you're listening live on the radio right now in 20 minutes.
You know why I love this area so much? Is because literally as Carolina is getting blown out in that game, well, you know, relatively speaking, right?
Like State fans, mean Monday night's game?
Yes.
I thought you were predicting the future.
No,
the one that's going to happen
today.
They
were, though. There are State fans either in my mentions or just on my Twitter timeline already bemoaning the beatdown that Carolina will inevitably put on them. Oh, great. Now Roy's extra mad because they lost. Great. Thanks a lot, Virginia Tech.
I have to say this to the NC State fans who rightfully,
I love you
guys. I don't know anyone who wasn't already thinking that, even if they didn't tweet that. But it's like y'all don't even know your own team. Like, not your program, not your history, because...
I was going to say, to be fair, Marilyn...
That's one thing. They have the history.
Several iterations of their team have...
Every single instance.
Similar
but
ending.
Look at this year's team.
I know.
They
I know.
Don't have a case for saying that this year's team will do what teams in seasons past have done.
That's not to say they won't take an L. I mean...
Oh, no, I didn't... No, hold. No one said they were winning, which we can discuss this game in depth in a minute, but...
Yeah, and we can mark this down for we got it wrong, but they ain't getting beat by 50. That ain't happening.
That's exactly it. I don't think that North Carolina, no matter how much Mad Roy they saw this week, which, by the way, folks, listen to Roy Williams
subdued.
And Luke May from Thursday press conferences, both of them saying effectively that Roy has gotten soft, even though that's not the word either of them used. He was like, I don't run guys like I used to, because if I tell everybody to get on the baseline, I got 7 players that walk over to the bike. He was like, we have those little, you know, over the bike stand where there are those little sodas and you have the little umbrella to drop into the coconut rum. And then they're just sitting there sipping. This is not a literal thing, by the way, folks.
Right, I know. He didn't say anything
just
about
biking
rum,
on their bike while I got 6 players who don't play running
running
baseline.
Laps. Yeah.
He was like, so I got to change up my approach to discipline after a loss like Monday. So, yeah. NC State fans, beware. Apparently, it wasn't as bad as it would have been in seasons past. Also, your team's not as bad at staying consistent as it has been in seasons past, which I think is the most important part of this.
You're right about that. They're definitely not, but I thought that was so funny. And
it was perfect. It was exactly.
And look, I'm not going to make fun of y'all State fans because, I mean, I could easily call myself out on my weird Panthers feelings that are pretty similar.
I'm not making fun.
I get
it.
No, I'm just saying I'm not making fun. I want them to know that we're not making fun of them, like, especially me, because I
every reason to say
there.
That. Every reason.
So, totally every reason, yes. And, that game's going to be, it's going to be an interesting one.
I love it because regardless of...
or maybe it won't be, I don't know.
Kevin Keats' insistence to continue to play Malik Abu and the starting lineup.
You know, he didn't look so bad against Pitt.
No, I'm not saying it looks bad. I'm just saying regardless of the minute distribution.
Yes.
Because if you look at the minutes versus the starters,
right.
Those numbers don't line up like
they don't.
Typically do for
so
a
there's got to be a reason.
So he's leaving Malik in the starting lineup because he's still waiting for Malik to fully become Malik after his injury at the start of the season.
Yeah.
But
that was he's a guy I really thought would flourish in this system, and maybe he still will.
Well, without I mean, I think the injury's why, and I'm still, you know, he's a guy who I am pulling for.
Of course.
But
we all like Malik.
If you look at the numbers, it's four guards and you're at seven. That's how they play. That's how NC State has done what it's done in the first half of the ACC season, and I'm excited for that matchup versus Carolina's.
I don't love it, but I'm not a coach because I miss Lenard Freeman being more of a factor, and there are definitely times where I feel like that lineup has hurt them, especially defensively, more so than offensively. I think offensively it's kind of helped them, but...
That's funny because defense is the reason why they play it.
Well, but that's also because they can't play Malik on defense.
Right.
Yeah. But it's not because
exactly.
It's not because like they think it's a shutdown lineup. It's just more like
it's what works.
Either Yurtseven or Lenard needs a rest. You know, that's the way I take it anyway.
It's not Yurtseven.
Yeah.
If you look at the times where Kevin Keats has played that
lineup.
It's
probably a little more Freeman.
For like 3.5 minutes mm-hmm. or more uninterrupted.
Yeah.
It's Omir in the center and either it's always Braxton Beverly, it's always Torin
Doran,
it's always Markell, and it's either LeVar Batts or it's Alec Freeman as the fourth guard. And
although Torin doing yeoman's work in the post as a makeshift four man at 6'6".
Leading rebounder on the team, seven a game.
Yeah.
I mean,
he has not been like a liability. It's just an odd thing to see.
It's a weird thing.
But
it's a weird look, but it's what has been most effective for NC State as of recent, especially since they got Markell back.
I mean, it's interesting to me though because I do think in some ways they could exploit Carolina's lack of size with that big lineup.
They could if they get the production that Lenard Freeman and Malik Abu can give them, but haven't recently.
And I'll say this. I think also this that like, and I mentioned this in the Miami game. Are there tweaks that Kevin Keats could have made in that game in particular that would have maybe given Miami a little more trouble on offense, for example? Yes, absolutely. But that State has to be who State is going to be under Kevin Keats. And so I totally understand and respect that. Like, they can't just suddenly, ooh, let's drop in this zone. You know what I mean? Like, that can't be who they are. And, you know, because Jim Larrañaga said it after the game. He said, look, we want to play fast, we being Miami. North Carolina, by the way, will also want to play fast. And and as Larrañaga said, we need an opponent to accommodate us because we can't force our own tempo. North Carolina usually a little better at that than Miami would be, but that's exactly what State did, is sort of accommodated them in terms of the tempo.
Exactly.
But again, State has to be who State is. You know what I mean? And so I think we're going to see that hold true as well at North Carolina. Would they have a better chance in a game where they slowed it down on paper? Maybe, but that's not who State is.
State can't. I mean,
right. That's not
State
who they
can't
are.
Slow it down and still be its best. And that's exactly what Kevin Keats said Thursday when he talked to us previewing the game. You know, North Carolina is going to want to run. North Carolina runs teams, and that's how they win oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
State, likewise. And Kevin was basically just like, you know, I understand that, but if we take us out of our best game, we've got no shot at all.
Absolutely.
And that's the truth of the matter.
Yes.
I do hope that part of that includes exploiting the lack of big experience, though.
For sure.
For North Carolina. I think it has to. I think you have to give Lenard and Malik their last trip to the Dean Dome as one that they can go in there and make money off of, figuratively.
And Omir as well, a guy whose last, like, memory against Carolina, or like the most significant one, was Luke May putting a move on him that everybody said should make Omir have to quit basketball. He's a world of difference is, like, in terms of the player he is now.
Well, and it's funny, too, because that was a flash of the Luke May that we now see every game.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then it was like, that's embarrassing because right. it's Luke May and he's just yes. not a great
yes.
ball player.
Yes, yes. You're exactly right.
They both
right.
are great. And
yeah, it is sort of an interesting reflection on where we are now with both guys. But yeah, and it's, you know, obviously State will have to do something that they didn't do a lot against Pittsburgh. And this will kind of lead us into we got it wrong.
Play well?
Sorry, I was going to say make shots.
We'll hone in a little
that
bit.
That was the thing that they tried not to do early. A bold strategy. And one that almost backfired.
Well, and gave up shots, I think, is the other half of that. As yes. Kevin Keats said, Pittsburgh deserved to go 0 from 6. 0 for 6 from the three-point line in the last 5:58, I guess, of the game. They were just jacking him up, and nothing fell. And Keats was just like, yeah, they deserved that because they didn't miss one yeah. all the rest of the game, basically.
They didn't, but the State also couldn't hit. Anything.
Let me just say this. NC State fans who are worried about getting waxed, their team getting waxed in Chapel Hill Saturday, they overcame a 10-point deficit at halftime at Pitt.
They were down 15 in the first half.
Like, they were down so much, and they never gave up, and they still won the game. They didn't lose at Pitt. Give this team a little bit of credit, please, for not being the team that folds like it has been in the past.
Here's my I got it wrong. Because I had sort of
never.
I sort of guaranteed State fans that they weren't going to have any problem, even though it was a road game, because Pitt is that bad. Now, I stand by my assertion that Pitt is that bad. Now, I didn't know y'all were going to miss everything. I didn't know y'all were going to try that, so that's my bad, I guess. But, you know, I still stand by the fact that Pitt is that bad. I also didn't know that y'all were going to try letting Pitt beat you off the dribble regularly, so that was also an interesting strategy.
To
be fair, I did
you almost got it wrong. Or you
I
did
really
get it wrong?
Did almost get it wrong. Well, I almost got it wrong because I guaranteed essentially that they would win. They won, but I ended up apologizing on Twitter before it was over. I said, "Do you want me to say I'm sorry? I'm sorry." By the way,
were people coming at you?
Yes.
Okay.
They were like, "Great, Brownlow. We told you it's NC State. It's more powerful than Pitt being bad." And I'm like, oh my God, y'all.
NC State is more. You did a whole podcast on this, didn't you?
I was also being called out for this reason.
On that.
Yes, that people All right. were saying, hi, have you met us?
And I'm not saying it's over. I am saying this team is mm-hmm. better at combating it and putting that narrative to bed. Like, in my
for
mind,
sure.
Kevin Keats in 3 seasons will be Dabo when Dabo addresses Clemsoning.
NC
State fans, this is my prayer for you, my wish for you, and hopefully Kevin Keats's gift for you is in the future. Let's call it, you know, 2-3 seasons. Somebody will bring up NC State ish, and Kevin Keats will be like, "That's not a thing. It's over. It never was a thing." And we'll be like, "Yeah, it kind of was a thing." And he'll just be like, "That's not a thing." Pretty much like how Dabo acts when somebody asks him about Clemson.
I like
that's
it.
The wish. That's the prayer.
Was there anything else that we got
wrong? Yeah, speaking of Clemson.
Uh-oh.
That's where I was kind of headed with that. I told Lauren last week, I was like, "Lauren, Clemson will be just fine after losing to North Carolina. Their season's not going to go under. Their season will be okay. It's not like they're going to drop off all of a sudden."
We're still a little TBD on this.
Lauren was like, "Yeah, no, they're screwed. It's just how it works." And I was like, "Okay, well,
yeah,
maybe, but no, I think they're." And what I said, this was my defense of my claim, was this Clemson team this season is different from Clemson teams in seasons past where they've been pretty successful by their standards,
mm-hmm.
in that they're not just one player. If you lose one player, if you eliminate one player, like defensively from contributing, the team can still play better mm-hmm. than we decided Jerron Blossom game as the guy that in seasons past, if you took him out of the equation,
yep.
Clemson was screwed.
Yeah.
Tore his ACL and is out for the season, yep. and Clemson scored a mere 36 points at Virginia. Hello, Wahoo fans. I know that you want to take all of the credit for that, but I will not let you because that's silly.
Well, it was their first full game without Grantham.
36 points, though? That's bad.
Yeah.
Even against Virginia, that's really bad.
Well, and look, yes, hi, Virginia fans, if you're here, we all understand that you're very good.
Your team is very good right now.
We know that you're one of the best defensive teams in the country, if not the best defensive
team. They are.
Team
no,
in the
no, it's
you
not,
are
the, it's
best
not one of,
team.
Lauren. It's the best. Clemson is the best defensive right.
Virginia.
Team. Wow, yeah, Virginia.
Clemson in football.
Clemson. I can't keep it straight. There's just so much orange.
I know. It's a lot of orange.
Virginia basketball is the best defensive basketball team in the NCAA. And Virginia fans, we know that. But I still feel as though after that game for the Tigers, I got it wrong when I said if you eliminate one player from this Klinsmann lineup, they will still be able to play well.
Well, Marilyn, I'll give you a little bit of hope that you could still be okay. Okay, so one bit of hope here is that they're going to Georgia Tech this weekend.
That's not how this works.
And that's a winnable game for them with or without Grantham.
So you won't contribute, you won't attribute the loss to Virginia, but you would attribute.
No. I'm saying, like, for Clemson, this is a game where, like, okay, you played your first full game without Dante Grantham against a really good Virginia. We get it,
it
right?
It was painful. Let's move on.
You got to win this game now.
Yeah.
If you're good, if you're going to be good, if you're going to get through this. Brad Brownell, there are a lot of L's in his name, and he took some L's last week, really. Because but they were pretty big L's, really.
I meant in his name, but good point. Touche.
He took more than two L's last week.
No.
And he took some big, big gut-punching L's. Not just on the court, but they
Which
lost
Which is why
Zion
I would
Williamson
like to apologize to any Clemson fans out there.
I will say this, though. One other thing you can look at for hope there is that the freshman who started in Grantham's place, Amir Sims, actually played a decent game as players for Clemson in that particular game went because no one played very well, but he had 9 points on 4 of 8 shooting, considering the rest of his teammates combined had 27. That's probably a decent afternoon for our night for the freshman. So he did
double digit
well.
Scoring, 5
considering
defensive
it's
rebounds.
His. I mean, I didn't remember him. Like when they were like they're gonna start Amir Sims instead. I've watched a lot of Clemson. I was like, who?
I mean, and I haven't, but I don't know him.
I remembered Mark Donald because he, like, hit a bunch of shots against State early and then started missing them. But, yeah. No, I mean, look, we'll see. We'll see if you're right or wrong. They've also got Carolina next week. And to me, that was a game looked at as a game that Clemson was going to win.
Oh, we promised Clemson was winning that one.
So I think we're going to learn a lot about where Clemson's at in these next two games. TBD. I'm going to
give
for
that one. Virginia team that we just addressed briefly. The perfect in the ACC conference leaders currently come into Durham to play Duke at 2 p.m. Saturday. It's, in my mind, the biggest game of the ACC season. I will be in Chapel Hill pouting if anyone needs me at tip-off. It's the best defensive team in the nation. There's not really a ranking system that has them anywhere below 2 in almost any category.
Yeah, Ken Pomeroy, the Tempo Free statistician, has them 1.
And then there's like RPI, they're up in the 1 and 2 slot.
Yeah.
NCAA, they're one, you know,
I think
they're
Duke's
1 or 2.
Actually in the last RPI I saw, but yeah.
But I mean, it's just like
it's right,
any
right
way
there.
You split it,
yep.
Virginia's the best defensively and Duke is the best offensively. Most efficient, most points per game, one of the highest field goal percentages. I think they're 3rd in the nation or 4th.
Yeah, Villanova passed them in KenPom, but that's
in
about
efficiency.
It.
Yep. Yeah. So it's like, oh, bummer, they're down to 2. So this is to me is like a battle of, you know, it's which best is
right.
better.
Strength on strength.
And I think this game will come down to whose weakness is worse.
Here's a stat for you, Marilyn.
Oh, no.
Virginia, since the 2014 season, 2013-14 season.
I already know this.
Yeah. They've taken 16 regular season losses. A quarter of them have been to Duke.
4?
Yeah.
I knew it.
They hadn't beaten Duke in the regular season since 2013.
I know, because they were so bombed.
Duke
is who ended their unbeaten season in 2015.
Mm-hmm. I was there. I'll never forget. Like, that's one of those games that you never really forget.
What was it? 2015. 14 is the year that they did beat them in the conference tournament.
Yes, I was going to say, I would like to add that they did beat Duke in the ACC tournament.
Which for them is huge.
And
monstrous.
It was in the title game, so they essentially won the title by beating them, but
it literally won the title by beating them.
Yes, they you're right, sorry. Trying not to use literally as much, but I also shouldn't have used essentially, because also an unnecessary word and incorrect. Virginia's had so much regular season success. And they've beaten so many of the league's powers, even teams with talent, you know, because you want to talk about...
I mean, definitely teams with talent.
Louisville has plenty of talent. They've beaten them. By the way, those teams play ugly, hideous games against each other. They should be set on fire. Like, as much as complaining as we sometimes do...
The worst good basketball in the ACC
about
is
Duke, Virginia.
Virginia-Louisville.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not close. But the complaining we do about Duke, Virginia, like, I actually think those games have been very entertaining over the years.
Oh, I've not had a problem with the Duke-Virginia games. I think they have been... I think they've been entertaining, and it's because, like, Virginia has this thing with North Carolina where they seem to... Tony Bennett's style does seem to win out in terms of they slow North Carolina mm-hmm. down more than North Carolina tends to speed them up.
Well, certainly even in Charlottesville.
Even when North Carolina wins.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. They've been slowed down more than Virginia's been sped up.
Yeah, for the
up.
Most part, yes, you're right about that.
For
they've
Duke,
controlled the pace. Yeah,
that hasn't been the case mm-hmm. as much, which to me has led to more enjoyable basketball because I don't like watching Virginia's game as much as I like watching Duke's. I'm whispering because I don't want anyone to scream at me. But it's a fact of the matter. I'm not saying it's not good. I think Virginia...
This is a separate... Yeah, I was going to say this is a separate discussion, but I almost feel like nowadays you get screamed at more if you say the other.
And
that I like the way they play.
Virginia's?
Yeah.
It depends on where you're at. You're speaking.
You're right. Obviously, if you're in Charlottesville, people will love
hey,
you.
Hey, Virginia fans who are on the road right now, driving down to Durham. Great to hear from you guys.
You know, Twitter is where we all declare our likes and dislikes of everything and that everyone's opinions are bad. But I do. I like it. Some people don't. It's okay. It's not for everybody. And for Maryland in particular, it's not for a lack of understanding what they do. She very much understands what they do. She just would rather teams play a little faster.
More importantly, I respect it and I recognize it as something that works just mm-hmm. wildly well.
Mm-hmm. No question.
It works so well. I mean, there's an entire cult disagreement because mm-hmm. of how noteworthy it is that Tony Bennett plays his teams the way that he does. Mm-hmm. It's not a disrespect thing. It's a personal preference thing.
Right.
I'm allowed to have mine, and y'all are allowed to have yours, and
Excellent.
I will buy in. How about this, Virginia? Here's my pact to you. I will buy in when Tony Bennett does better in the postseason.
I will. No,
and I'm almost anxiously waiting for
that.
See,
for me, like, the postseason thing is a completely fair knock, and it's one that we have to...
It's not a knock, it's a fact.
Right.
And that's distinctly different.
Well, sure, but it's also a fact that, like, Duke's been knocked out early in the last... That doesn't mean
yes,
we don't...
Yes, they have.
That doesn't mean Duke, like, that they're, you
yes,
know...
Yes, they have.
That he had a trash coaching season.
Not
it
at
just
all.
Means they had a bad...
Tony Bennett's
I mean?
Never had a trash coaching season
no.
in recent memory.
Right, and I know that's not what you're saying. I'm just saying, like, in general, you know, yes, it's a fact. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're, you know, the best or the worst. It's
I
just
hope
a thing.
That when Tony Bennett gets to the Final Four, they give him all the bonuses from all the postseason.
For
he
sure.
Just pile them on up and put them on his plate.
They were right there before.
Keep him forever.
The
money's
I think
still
they just
in the bank.
It over against Syracuse again.
The money's
too
still.
Soon?
Oh my God. Get
I'm
out
sorry.
Of here. You're fired from the podcast
I'm
for the
sorry.
Rest of the day.
I, you know, I
what
say
what color
this
are you going to wear to the game? I'll tell the Virginia fans how to find you.
I don't know yet. Because don't forget, I've got to pick a neutral for both.
Green is your option here. Green and purple.
I just wore green the other day. I think it's dirty.
Green and purple are your options. Pink. Pink is always safe. Sam Ponder told us that once.
I have my own personal problems with pink, but, you know, I don't really own
Spare
a lot
me.
Of it. I know.
Yellow is safe.
You're right about that. I do have a yellow.
Yellow is my favorite color.
For Josh Pastner and Georgia Tech. I'm just kidding. But yeah.
Okay, well, that's a hard left, guys.
Not
sorry.
Really.
Anyway, Virginia and Duke will play basketball. And
yeah, to me, as big a hurdle, like, you know how you're saying the postseason is your hurdle for them. And that's, I think it's a fair one. For me, Duke is their hurdle. Yeah, that's the one I need to see them get over. Really. Because we've seen them do it against almost everybody else, and they can't get over this hurdle, even though the games have been close.
What if
for the most
Tony
part?
Bennett beats Duke in the same season that Tom Izzo beat Carolina?
Whoa.
I need like a truth bombs explosion
Whoa.
Happening
and
right
in a
now.
Season where Carolina's shooting nothing but threes
and Duke's pushing the ball inside.
I
can't.
It's
I can't.
Too much change.
I'm like getting the chills just thinking about it.
That'd be pretty crazy.
So weird. No, I think yeah, I like your pitch of Duke, except for that. For me, the thing with Duke is like they literally beat them. Virginia, they literally beat Duke them for an ACC title.
Yeah, I know, I hear you.
So you do have that
but
one, which
that
is
was,
kind of a big one.
We got 14, so now we're looking at 15, 16, 17, and now 18, right?
Yeah.
And
also,
so,
at
and the, way
the ACC,
lost.
Why did North Carolina, Duke, and Virginia not
Hi.
Meet more? Hello?
Well, I have a follow-up question. Why? when we have entire weekends around here where there are no teams playing, why do we have to have State Carolina playing at 12 and Duke Virginia playing at 2?
Yes.
Why is this a thing?
This is terrible.
You know, in 2 weeks, we got nobody here. Nobody. And you're going to have them not even spaced out enough so people can do both?
What? Where's my 4 o'clock
tip-off?
This
is a trash thing to make people choose. So that's why Joe Ovius and I, we're not choosing. You can't make us. We're not. We're going to both, sort of. Well, mostly.
You're going to miss a little of both also.
We are. Yes. We are inevitably going to have to.
Well, and here's my question, too. So I saw Allie LaForce, who will sideline both
of these CBS games, by the way.
For CBS.
Wait, does one have to wait for the other? Oh,
one's going to have to wait for the other.
Maryland, wait. What if?
Oh, no.
Be with me here. What if?
Present with you.
State Carolina ends up going to overtime. Joe and I leave early enough so that we're trying to get to a regulation tip. And they end up giving us enough cushion so we make both. That'd be crazy. It's not going to happen. But
well, no. I mean, it could. Crazier things have happened here, and we've watched them, surely.
Would they still have to start the Dukes Virginia? How would that work?
No, here's the thing. So they're both on CBS, right?
Yes.
Allie LaForce has to sideline both games.
What?
I assume. Yes, I know.
Wait.
This is what I was trying to say. You just kept interrupting
me. I'm sorry.
Me.
I just had the thought, but no.
Okay, if you guys don't know who Allie LaForce is, she's she's like the lead college basketball sideline reporter for CBS.
Yeah, she's great. She's fantastic.
She posted on her Instagram, like Wednesday or something, this cartoon that I don't know if someone drew it for her, or if it's an actual official from CBS cartoon, and it's like the Tobacco Road trip, and it's like it's got her like little cartoon blonde alley in the middle, and North Carolina State on one side of it, and then like Duke Virginia on the other side of it, and she's like gonna make the Tobacco Road trip, and I'm like, Allie, that's gonna really suck, but also I'm very much jealous, and can I catch a ride?
But
it's gonna be impossible, or she's just not gonna actually be present for a pre-tip-off hit in Cameron. Or they're going to have to hold the game.
So was she not saying she's just going to go to part of both? She's saying she's literally the
sideline partner?
It
looked like she was working both when I looked at it. Because okay. I was like, I almost was like, hello, can I please DM you so we can discuss this? Because I need to know how that assignment's going to work. Because it doesn't seem possible to me, and to put it very simply. Like, I mean, look. She's not sidelining both, but like she says, take over CBS, or she's doing the takeover of the Instagram story. I don't see there's a way ever
possible for her
unless they helicopter her from her post game interview with, you know, whoever wins in Chapel Hill and drop her off at Cameron for her pre tip off.
It's bananas.
Hit. Like, it just.
Yeah, that'd be
I know
crazy.
9 miles. I know they think that's a 15. It's not going to be that fast. It just won't. It's impossible.
I was gonna say. To be fair, she wouldn't have to deal with part of the logistic problems that Joe and I will, which is one of which is you have to park in that parking deck and then walk over, which adds some time.
I'm talking about vehicles moving on concrete.
Because at least she can drop.
Is what I'm talking about.
At least she can be dropped off like at the door.
Yes.
She doesn't have to worry about.
Yeah. But I just think that the getting out of the Dean Dome, if she stays until the game ends in Chapel Hill.
Ain't happening.
She's not getting out of the Dean Dome before tip off.
Unless she has a police escort that stops
everybody. I hope
everybody.
She does. Hello, Chapel Hill and Durham police, if you are out there and not already planning to do this.
Well, anyway, it's going to.
Get the girl an escort.
It's going to be a really exciting day in the Triangle, either way.
I'm seriously so bummed I'm missing the Virginia-Duke game
in
person.
No, I don't blame you. Like, it's ridiculous that we have to choose.
Well, it's tough, too, because we know here locally, and if this is not the case, Duke fans, show yourselves, our metrics tell us more people read and watch North Carolina and NC State.
No question.
Than they do Duke, individually. So combined, they certainly... You know, I'm more useful to my employer at State Carolina.
Yeah, and it'll be a fun game.
Yeah, like, it'll be such a fun game. But Virginia leads the ACC.
It's
They're
a top
perfect.
Five
They've
matchup.
Got two wins ahead of Duke. It's a top five matchup. If Duke wins, Virginia is still in the driver's seat of the ACC. But Virginia still has to host Louisville later this week, visit Miami. And what's the third one I told you that wasn't that hard last week? They've got like four games coming up, and I looked at it and I was like, Lauren, they'll be fine. Duke's the hardest, and that's still true. But if they lose to Duke, there is a chance they take another L, and then Duke would have the head-to-head, and then Duke could be in the top spot of the ACC.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, halfway point. We're there.
Oh, man, it's crazy. It really is. Yeah, must have been at Syracuse. Syracuse suddenly remembered how to make baskets, so that could be problematic.
Okay, I'm going to punt on the AP Top 25 this week because we need to address this.
That's fine.
USA Gymnastics,
also
Michigan
the only,
State Gymnastics.
Yeah, also, before we get into that, the only controversy I had in my mentions for my rankings was Rhode Island fans mad at me. So well, they'll be fine.
Who cares?
But anyway, yeah, we really do need to address this story. It's been, thankfully, it's become a much more dominant part of the news cycle here in the last week or so as Larry Nassar's trial is winding down and there have been a lot of victim impact statements, so many victim impact statements, in fact, and more and more here over the last week or so, people have been paying attention, thankfully, to those statements. And I know like we have live streamed them on WRLSportsFan.com as well. I watched some of them and I hadn't really been watching a lot. I've tried to read some coverage, but I haven't watched a lot of them. And I finally was able to do that and just broke down.
Yeah, it's so last week, just for full transparency
for
here, Lauren and I discussed before we began the podcast whether or not we would address this last Saturday. And both decided that perhaps we should wait until the trial finally ended midweek this past week.
Yeah, and I think we both wanted to make sure we felt comfortable talking about it as well, because this type of story is something that a lot of people can go a little bit half informed on, and it's the type of story that you absolutely should never do that with, because it's very serious when it involves sexual assault, and I wanted to make sure we both felt ready to talk about it intelligently and with as much information as we could have.
Yeah, so Larry Nassar was working with USA Gymnastics and Michigan State University and independently in the state of Michigan for a very long time, at least two decades. I'm not sure if it ends up being, you know, closer to 25 years once it's all said and done with. This past fall, pleaded guilty to, I think, 7 counts of sexual assault initially in 2016.
Yeah, maybe. I know he's already been sentenced to 60 years.
Yeah, so the 60 years is for 7 counts of
child
criminal sexual assault.
Oh, I thought it was child pornography.
There's also a child pornography charge. He was investigated for 19 months by Michigan State and was still on the staff as he was being investigated.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, in early September of 2016, he was fired. Or relieved of his duties, or let go. He was no longer
Whatever
with the university.
Terminology they saw fit to use.
In the past, I guess it took a week. More than 150 girls, women testified against him, telling their stories of how specifically he sexually assaulted them. In his terms, he was quote unquote treating them. Among these were young women who said that they never actually got their medical problems solved.
Yep.
He did not even begin to treat them. It's not he treated them and he assaulted them.
No. Yeah,
he outright assaulted and raped them and failed to fix their legitimate medical problems.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, one young woman said that she faked as if she'd fallen in the bathroom, getting out of the bathtub, slipped and fell give herself a concussion so she wouldn't have to go to the USA Gymnastics practice because he would have had to treat her first.
Yeah. It's just, and look, he had, I guess, enough of a track record in terms of who he had supposedly helped and other gymnasts that he had supposedly treated successfully. And, you know, these girls trusted him as a result of that. You know, they trusted that this was the guy that they could go to make them okay in a sport that is so sort of traumatizing to your body, you know, and it's very hard on your body. And you want to go to somebody that's going to make your body feel better because you need to feel better to continue to excel at your sport. And that's what these girls trusted that he would do for them. And not only did he not do that for a lot of these girls, but he traumatized them in a way that they couldn't have even possibly imagined going into it. And it's just, it's so sickening. And I think part of what makes it especially, gross, for lack of a better word, is how many institutions failed these women. Just how many levels of sort of institutions that they were failed at. You could talk about Michigan State. You could talk about USA Gymnastics. I mean, where else? The gymnastics program that he worked at that also...
It was also in Eastern Michigan.
Yeah,
just a privately owned...
So many so many institutions and higher authorities that failed these women.
For the record, there was not silence. It wasn't that they didn't investigate this off their own whim. It was that reports were being made to higher standing folks in these organizations, whether it was USA Gymnastics or it was Michigan State University, and investigations were either denied or began, and he was not removed from his position in a timely manner, or they didn't investigate thoroughly, legitimately, or perhaps at all in some instances, although saying they had, and allowed him to continue doing what he was doing. He, even grosser, midweek, whenever his sentencing was announced, claimed that he had been a victim, effectively, of media and outside factors manipulating these young women into thinking that his treatment was wrong and that they were many of the same ones that praised him over and over and over. And I just find that incredibly mind-blowing, given that there are actual records of not praise, but these women trying to get help sooner and from more people.
Yes.
So Michigan State University's president has stepped down. The athletic director stepped down.
You want to talk about not taking responsibility. She also failed to take any for what happened on her watch
failed to take any and then finally left her post. So, what do you think really happened there? I think someone came to terms with the reality of lack of oversight.
True leaders, by the way, I think, would sort of step up and say, look, this happened under my watch and it's unacceptable. And she, maybe it's a legal thing, I don't know, but guess what? You've already gotten yourself in more legal trouble as an institution by not doing more for these girls to begin with.
It's just terribly sad. I think, too, one of the hot topics, and Lauren, you and I haven't discussed this before now, so this will be interesting to see how it unfolds, is whether or not the NCAA should have said it will investigate Michigan State. It did say that it will early this week, that it has opened an investigation. And I'll say my quick thoughts on it, and then I'm very interested to hear yours. I like that the NCAA says we will and we are going to investigate, because it is not something that a supposed organization that oversees the operations of an athletic department at one of its member institutions. I don't think them saying nothing is the answer. I do not think they are the most appropriate body to punish Michigan State University. They are an appropriate body to punish the athletics department, but they can't issue the punishments that are most appropriate in this
it's
in this particular case.
Similar to the Penn State thing in that way.
It
ended up biting them because they really had no place in that.
And I get that, but I think that this is a case where both are better than merely one.
Right.
Unfortunately, it does become very murky when you look at, well, what can they do to actually help the situation? The answer turns out to be not much, because what are they going to do? Take scholarships from the gymnastics program there? Well, all the leaders have already left.
Yep.
And I'll say this, Lauren, and then I'll get out of the way for you. To any and everyone who wants to draw comparison between the North Carolina academic scandal and the Michigan State rape and sexual assault case, these two things are so wildly different from a biological and health standpoint, from a mental standpoint, from a life safety standpoint.
Even from an NCAA jurisdiction
standpoint. From a jurisdiction standpoint. And I put that last because it's the least important.
Facts.
There are young women who committed suicide, ended their lives because of what this man did to them, and because the governing bodies who should have stepped in front of him and taken him out of his position did not do that. That is in no way comparable to any NCAA national championship that may or may not have been won in any span of time within the confines of athletes passing classes that you do or don't believe were legitimate.
Nope.
Those two things are not alike. Furthermore, the NCAA, part of its bylaws, insist that university athletic departments are responsible for keeping their student athletes safe.
Yeah, they did not do that.
this is not safe.
And that makes it a little different from Penn State.
And that's
that
where the jurisdiction changes.
Right. No, I think that's a good point, actually, Marilyn. I hadn't thought about that.
And that's what I have to say about that. They are not the same. If you're comparing them, you are disgusting to me.
Yeah, and to me.
And there are, just for the record,
it's happened.
Reporters and folks who
should know better
prided themselves professionally on trying to investigate and expose North Carolina who have drawn that comparison. And it is sickening for folks to not understand the difference in someone helping a student writing a paper, whether or not they did or didn't, and someone sticking his fingers inside a woman without her permission in ways that are not allowed. And I'm sorry, because that probably got more specific than it needed to.
I don't think
those two things are not alike.
I don't think it did, Marilyn.
In
any
capacity.
I don't think that was too much, because it's like you said, I am so, I'm sorry. Like, it's not the same. And in fact, I remember when it used to be compared to Penn State, that also made me nauseous for the same reasons, quite frankly.
Yep. Because also not the same.
Right. No, that doesn't mean that you can't talk about North Carolina in its own context and that it was bad. Like, you know, you can, but don't minimize what victims go through and everything that it does to their lives by trying to put those in the same sentence. Like, do not do that. Think about what you're saying. Just please. That's all I ask all of you to please do. Think about these women, and they're not just a number. Like, they're actual people. As far as what I think of the NCAA, I am very skeptical of them in general. I didn't like that they no commented it, and then a few days later, when this is taking off and becoming a thing, suddenly they want to hop on the train. I wish they'd sit down too, frankly. Because we all know they're probably not going to do anything because they're afraid of getting sued, but they just want to look like they're doing something. I'm glad they're finally speaking out on behalf of these women. Too little, too late, if you ask me. But,
and it is. I agree. It is too little, too late, but it does, in my mind, beat nothing.
You're Tom Izzo, and you say after a game last week, and I don't care you made a mistake. I don't care that you didn't have enough information. This is happening at your school. If you say that you hope the right man got convicted after everything that we've seen and heard, maybe don't talk next time, Tom. Like, this doesn't have to be that hard. If you don't understand what you're talking about, then shut up about it. Like, that's, and you know what? I've seen a lot of talk about, you know, whatever, the Me Too movement and how it's gone too far and blah, blah, blah. There are people who still don't see these women as people. And the fact that Tom Izzo would say that, oh, we hope we got the right guy. What, almost 200 women aren't enough for you, Tom? How many more you need? 50? How many more do you need? Like, I'm sorry. At a certain point, the Me Too movement is because of stuff like this. It's because institutions just kept turning a blind eye because that was the easier thing to do. Because he's more powerful than them. And because it's his word against theirs. And that's why all these women kept getting victimized and young girls. And they'll never be the same because of it. Never. And so, you know, the fact that something like this can happen, I was really inspired by watching them get up there and share everything that happened to them and take their power back. It gave me so much hope for maybe where we're headed in this country and in our society. It gave me hope for us, for people like us, Marilyn. Like, it gave me that. But no. Just that the fact that it could happen made me feel the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, the Tom Izzo thing, it was shocking to read. When I read it, though, in my mind, because I am a person who gives people the benefit of the doubt, I thought to myself, I hope what Tom comes out and says after that is that he intended for that to mean not only clearly Nassar being the right person, but anyone who enabled him to have been.
Well, he was defending their president. In the comments.
I know he wasn't. Yeah. I know he wasn't. And I said, look, because this is me. And it's just,
that's a complicated situation in and of itself.
It is. It's tough.
That.
I mean, the answer there may have been not to speak.
Yep.
I want to echo what you're saying, which is congratulations to these young women who finally are seeing a man who did so many wrong things to so many of them for so long put away, who can know now that his life will end in prison.
Because of them.
Because of what they did,
yes,
that they have taken not only his ability to continue what he was doing harmfully away, but his ability to live freely as he wanted away, and an astronomical amount of appreciation and respect for the presiding judge in the case. Rosemarie Aquilina, I believe is how you say her last name. She's been outstanding in every way. And no more appropriate person could have been in the position that she was in and said and enabled and encouraged and given platforms to the women in the way that she did. If nothing else, she and the women who spoke the way that they did are people that we can be proud of, despite how ashamed to know that people like Larry Nassar exist. Yes. I am.
Yep. And that's really all we have to say. And they inspire us, and let's all just be better.
You've been listening to the Topics and Takes podcast with WRALSportsFan.com's Lauren Bronlow and Marilyn Payne. A reminder that you can download this weekly podcast at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app on iTunes or the Google Play stores, or listen on Saturday mornings at 9 on 99.9 The Fan.